The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to cooley@admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 4th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason, back from Europe for less than 24 hours, but not suffering jet lag just yet. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain markets with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Well, in agricultural news, South Korea has banned all U.S. beef imports. USDA is planning more GMO environmental studies despite the displeasure of the judicial system. And a new survey says the confidence in the safety of the U.S. food supply is slipping right here in America. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories a bit later in the program. And then we'll visit the farm of Czeslaw Golub. He has about 10 acres in the Polish foothills and seven red Polish dairy cows. Those, as you'll hear, came to him courtesy of the Heifer Project. That's a not-for-profit out of Arkansas. Our story today will wind through a parallel set of ideas that examine why and how both the mountainside Polish farmer and the Polish cattle breed have been spared economic defeat. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat at 520 and a quarter, down a half today. September futures were unchanged at 535 and a half, and December contract at 546 and a half, down a half for the day. July corn futures at 383 and three quarters, down 3 cents. September 388 and a quarter, down a penny. And December futures, your new crop unchanged at $3.83. July soybean futures off 1 3/4 at 815 and three quarters. The August at 823, down 1 3/4. November beans at 8.46 and a quarter, down a penny. Bean meal futures nearby contract July at 2.2040. That's down a dollar for the day. July bean oil at 35.75, down 6 cents. From the feeder cattle pit over at the Mercantile Exchange, a 77.5 cent gain today at 111.25 cents. June live cattle at 91.12 and a half. They're up 32 and a half for the day. The August futures unchanged at $90.67 and a half a hundredweight. June lean hogs 32 and a half cents lower at 74.55 for the afternoon. Outside markets, nearby crude oil trading $66.13 a barrel, now down $1.04 for the afternoon. The CRB index at 315.64, up 152, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 13,652, and it's just about 15 cents lower at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It appears that our own Kurt Kimmel is away this afternoon at Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. No need to worry. One of the stablemates there in the office joins us this afternoon. Craig Knapsiger is on the line. Good afternoon to you, Craig.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Are you with Bates Commodities or with Grainfield?
Bates Commodities.
You're with Bates?
Yes.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit. Thanks for filling in, by the way. I know that those two guys are both out so that we don't have Pete Manhart there and we don't have Kurt there, but never fear. Craig Knapsiger is with us. So let's go through the numbers. Some interesting things happening today in Chicago. We had some new contract highs in both the July and November beans. Can you tell me why?
Well, we've got to inspire South America to keep producing at least where they were. As far as bean acres, there's talk that as the real goes up, they can buy less with theirs. So we need to entice them. $8 beans to us may only be equate to $4, $4.50, $5. I don't know what the relationship is, but it's somewhat less. less than what we are receiving back here. Plus, with the ethanol expansion, we're going to need more corn acres next year, somewhere in the tune of 6 to 8 million more acres. So having said that, we are not out of beans, but there's the anticipation that if we don't have good to excellent growing weather here across the Corn Belt, we probably will take that carryout back down to that 320 million bushel or even less.
You know, the beans made those new contracts highs, and then they settled off, but only a penny and three quarters. Will they make another run at that more than once yet this week before they break through it, if they do that?
I would think they were going to try another attempt at it. It seems like everywhere we've seen what we thought was resistance becomes support after a while. And there's the thought through the market trade that beans don't usually stay in this $8 to $9 range very long. We either drop back into the sevens or we go up to that nine. And that may be what they're working on at this point, getting us through this $8 range, if we can.
No, I've been traveling in Europe for a week, so I'm not really up to date on what's been happening in the weather forecast and what there might be calls for in the coming weeks. At this point, are we looking at anything in the way of calls from the weather forecast that say things will get warmer and will be drier, or is it just kind of a wait-and-see attitude?
There's a lot of different opinions going on out there. Yes, we're going to turn warmer here toward the end of the week. Some are saying we're going to have a high-pressure ridge set up here again in the east, blocking most of the major lows that come through to produce our rains. Some are saying, no, it's going to be a 3 or 4 day event, and then they're going to slowly break down again. It's anybody's guess right now, but the east side of the Mississippi is definitely more have-nots in the rain gauges than the haves. West side of Mississippi has been getting more than enough rain. I was talking to a guy in Nebraska saying that they're thinking their wheat may be starting to sprout in the head before they get it combined.
As we take a look, and that'll be something we can talk about for the wheats in just a bit, but as we take a look at a weather forecast, then it's probably much more on the normal side of the range than anything else, and we're at contract highs for the soybeans. Is there any reason for farmers to think about making some cash sales?
I don't know if I'd go as far as making cash sales. I might watch these put options and maybe try and pick up some relatively inexpensive put options to secure our bottom side, and then that leaves your upper side open to wherever we want to go. I know there's some wild figures being thrown out there, teen beans. Anything's possible if we get a weather scare. We also have to remember that we've got rust down there in Louisiana much earlier than normal, and if we do have the hurricanes come up through the Gulf, that could very well bring those rust spores up here if we have the moisture and humidity to allow them to grow, and you know, maybe we'll be in a spraying scenario here in the Midwest. I don't know. We've never dealt with that. I think we have the spray here, but I think it's the fear of the unknown of how it's going to affect us.
On the subject of rust, Asian soybean rust, of course, came out of China to begin with, and that reminds me that we probably ought to talk about that marketplace just a bit because it has dropped off substantially. I think I heard an 8% decline overnight in the Chinese marketplace.
Yes, it didn't seem to really affect us here. It seems like the initial drop, I believe, six, 8 weeks ago when we dropped that 6%, yeah, we took a dive in most of the markets, but then, you know, we worked through it, we came back, and the next one we didn't acknowledge as well, and this one we just kind of let it go by the wayside. I think the last time I checked, the Dow was only down 20 or 21 points.
Tell me a little bit about the corn market for the day.
Okay, on the corn market, we had earlier openings here with the July making some new highs here, and then we backed them off here toward the end. 389.5 was that high in that July. December got up to 387.25 and just really couldn't hold on to that and backed them off to unchanged in that December at 383 toward the end of the day.
Anything else we need to talk about before I let you go for the afternoon?
Other than just kind of watch the weather. I mean, as the weather turns off drier, which they did at noon, took a little more rain out of this forecast, probably we're going to put some more value into this crop. And as they put the rains back in on the east side of Mississippi, we're probably going to take some value out.
Craig, we appreciate you filling in for the day.
Thank you.
Craig Nafziger is with Bates Commodities. He's filling in this afternoon for Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. We appreciate Craig stepping in on short notice this afternoon as we go through the closing market report right here on the Information Advantages AM 580 Ag Report for the day.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Somebody from the Chesapeake Energy Office will join us from Chicago today. Our own Mike Sola says the forecast for the two-state region tonight looks like this. In the northern sections and central parts of Indiana, he says it'll be mostly cloudy with a few scattered showers, elsewhere partly cloudy. Lows will range from 48 in northern Indiana to 60 in the far south. Tomorrow in eastern Indiana, mostly cloudy, elsewhere partly sunny. Widely scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. They'll be most numerous in eastern Indiana. Highs will range from 63 near Lake Michigan to around 80 in the southern part of Illinois. Tomorrow wind speeds will peak at about 5 to 15 miles an hour. The extended forecast for the two-state region of warming trend will be accompanied by a threat for severe weather on Thursday. Temperatures will be in the 90s in the south and the central parts of the two-state region, with dew points climbing into the 70s in some areas. Rainfall for the remainder of this week should be distributed more uniformly than in recent weeks, in a range of 1 to 1.5 inches. The exception would be in the areas that get under the heavier thunderstorms on Thursday and possibly on Friday. Time now to take a look at the news. AM 580's Dave Dickey is here with all of those stories in the agricultural world.
In agricultural news, South Korea slapped a ban on all U.S. beef imports today after USDA reported Cargill and Tyson shipments of beef containing banned rib bones were actually intended for U.S. domestic consumption. South Korea says the ban will remain in place until the U.S. comes up with measures to prevent it from happening again. The incident is expected to have a negative effect on U.S. efforts to get South Korea to open its beef market wider. Meanwhile, USDA today announced that the Honduras has agreed to fully restore beef trade with the U.S. In 2006, U.S. beef exports to Honduras was worth $1.1 million. USDA says it will continue to do environmental impact studies on a case-by-case basis for GMO seeds, despite a ruling from a federal judge criticizing USDA for what he called its cavalier attitude toward regulation of biotech alfalfa. Last month, the judge barred planting of Monsanto's GM alfalfa until USDA completes a detailed EIS. Such studies can take up to 2 years to complete. John Turner is director of policy coordination programs for biotechnology at APHIS. Turner says USDA may opt for less intensive environmental assessments rather than detailed EIS studies. A survey by the Food Marketing Institute, which represents three-quarters of all retail food sales in the U.S., indicates only 66% of consumers are either completely or somewhat confident in the safety of supermarket food. That's down from 82% in 2006. Rising oil and soybean oil prices are placing U.S. biodiesel plants at break-even profitability. Industry officials say at break-even levels, biodiesel companies have a difficult time convincing investors to come on board, while other companies might have to consider cutbacks in production. The National Biodiesel Board says there are 105 plants in production and 77 under construction. If soy oil prices remain high, U.S. producers can fairly easily turn to other feedstocks, including canola oil, animal fat, cigarettes and cooking oil. And extended electronic trading hours began today for a number of Chicago Mercantile Exchange commodities, including live and feeder cattle, lean hogs, and pork bellies. Trading on the contracts is now available from 9:05 a.m. Central Time Monday through 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Friday, with a daily one-hour break at 4 p.m. Central Time. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, the Heifer Project, centered in Arkansas, is working to improve the environment. The not-for-profit trains very poor farmers with small holdings around the globe how to do a better job of raising livestock and caring for the land. I produced this report while in Poland on how the Heifer Project is helping to reestablish a native cattle breed, and in the process is supporting a goal of the EU's Common Agricultural Policy. The red Polish breed of cattle is a tough dual-purpose animal. Here in the foothills of Poland, not far from Krakow, the Heifer Project is staging a comeback for the breed. The project purchased 100 red Polish heifers and gave them, along with a little animal husbandry and environmentally friendly agricultural practices training, to Polish farmers like Czesław Golob.
This project has been a great success for me because not only did I get the cattle, but we also get subsidies on each head of this cattle. Without the assistance of the foundation, I would have found it hard to buy so many head of cattle, especially as in order to get any subsidies, you had to have more than 4 head.
Those subsidies are an interesting little twist to the Heifer Project story. In Poland, which happens to be one of 10 new nations admitted to the European Union just a few years ago, like in other places around Europe, the CAP, or the Common Agricultural Policy, think U.S. Farm Bill, essentially pays some farmers to stay, well, small. The Red Polish, while a native breed, nearly disappeared because it wasn't really very productive, either as a meat or a dairy animal. Though it handled the Polish hillsides very well, says Jan Marcinek of the Regional Business Development Association.
This breed of cattle is truly healthier and it makes a better use of the fodder as available, but at the same time they're less productive, and this is why in order to keep them they have to be supported, and this is why a special fund exists at the level of the Ministry of Farming.
That subsidy does not really matter to the Heifer Project. It just wants to preserve the breed and to give poor farmers some best management practices training. That actually plays pretty well with some of the European Union's agricultural policies that are socially, ecologically, and environmentally oriented. That is, they pay farmers to stay small, relatively non-competitive, and to keep the hillsides, like those in Poland, looking good. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Well, I traveled to Poland, Belgium, the Netherlands, and France as a journalism fellow of the German Marshall Fund of the United States. The fund was established, of course, by Germany to promote transatlantic understanding of social and political issues. You can learn more at www.gmfus, that's for German Marshall Fund U.S., .org. I was one of 14 on the trip. You should watch papers like the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Star Tribune out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and the Washington Post for stories on the GMF trip for Agricultural Journalism Fellowship in the coming weeks. Online with us now to take a look at what's been happening in the cash grain market is Brian Stark of the Andersons. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk about what's been happening over the past week. While I was away, did the cat play?
Yeah, the cat was playing a lot, specifically on old crop basis. Kind of mentioned a little bit on Commodity Week this week, but since April 1, old crop basis here has improved 19 cents. Very hot commodity right now, as the farmer movement off the farm has been very slow. So the only way the end user can get grain into the pipeline is to ratchet that basis up, and that's what we've seen here. I suspect that that's going to continue to maintain its hot pace, at least through the month of June. With my interaction from farmers, they tend to, whatever's sitting on farm, want to hold on to it until we get closer to pollination to see what the weather's going to do. So I imagine old crop basis will remain firm.
And I was just going to suggest that that was probably the case, that even now we're looking at an inverse of, what, just 0.75 cents in July, December, but there is an inverse there nonetheless at this point. Is there a point at which the December contract you think will fall off?
No, I think at some point, you know, you're going to have this, whether it carries from SEP to DEES when the July goes off the board, but at some point there's going to be an inverse created mainly due to lack of movement. But I think at some point when the farmers do unload the rest of their corn, say July, whenever it occurs, you're going to get this flood of grain into the market, and with the conventional index roll, when that happens, those spreads should fundamentally look at a carry again as we move forward. So I think it's only for a short time frame that you're going to see that inversion, unless we get into a drought scenario and all of a sudden the faucet shuts off.
Usually that time frame would come at the end of July, maybe the last 2 weeks and into August.
Correct.
Will it be moved at some other point this year or not?
No, I don't think so. I think, just like I said, talking to customers, they're content to look through pollination, the key growing stage for corn, and whether things look good. I mean, obviously, if we're not doing getting enough moisture during that time frame and the market explodes and inverse widens, then maybe they're more prone to hang on into it later in August. But at some point, movement will occur before we get to harvest, and that's probably when that inversion will relax moving forward.
Are you really sure about that? I mean, doesn't that, or hasn't that been in part because of the loan over the last several years?
Well, true, I suppose. But, I guess for me in our interaction that guys, they may choose to carry it forward. I really don't know. The one interesting statistic looking at the ending stocks that we've seen recently is that normally it's about a 50%, maybe even leaning heavier into farm ownership with the ending stock projections. But if you look at the numbers that we've seen recently, commercials probably own around 55% to 60% of the projected carryout right now. So more corn in the commercial's hands, so maybe the inversion will stay in place longer than people anticipate.
What about the soybean market for today?
Soybean market today, obviously kind of settling back off some recent highs. Obviously, the tight vegetable oil supply in the world has lent strength to that the last 2 to 3 weeks. And in general, we're going to get the first ratings for beans this afternoon, and that'll probably dictate short-term trade interest as far as where it's going to go the balance of the week here this afternoon.
And your bids for the afternoon?
We are 378 cash corn, falls 358 cash beans, 786 fall 816.
All right, we appreciate it much.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Somebody from that office joins us each and every Monday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. The music you've been listening to this afternoon, I recorded at a bed and breakfast, frankly, while we were in Poland early last week on Monday and Tuesday. We'll talk more about that later in the week as well. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to WILL AM 580. In 2 minutes, we'll talk about the agricultural weather, your regional newscast. That one comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The Blagojevich administration is trying to send a message that it's ready to get down to work on a state budget. Aides say the Democratic governor wants to start each week by meeting with legislative leaders to discuss progress on the budget. They're also offering to end each week by meeting with rank-and-file lawmakers. Democratic leaders have failed to agree on a new state budget plan. Many lawmakers are skeptical about the governor's call for a major new health plan and gambling expansion. The governor's office says frequent negotiations now could prevent another deadlock at the end of June. But Blagojevich didn't attend the news conference announcing the proposal, and his aides wouldn't answer any questions about the governor's heated argument last week with a Democratic state senator. Funeral services have now been scheduled for a soldier from Urbana who died serving in Iraq last week. Visitation for Robert Liggett is scheduled from 1 to 3:30 on Wednesday at Heath and Vaughn Funeral Home in Champaign. Funeral services will be at 3:45 at the funeral home. The 23-year-old Army Private First Class died Tuesday in a non-combat-related incident. Police in Bloomington, Indiana, say no foul play is suspected in the death of Indiana University journalism professor Dave Adams. The 59-year-old Adams was found dead Saturday, lying face down in a small pond outside his home. Adams was the supervisor of the Indiana Daily Student newspaper. Authorities in Pulaski County are working to determine if charges are warranted in a riot involving nearly 50 inmates at Ulan's Tri-County Justice and Detention Center. Illinois State Police say 46 inmates barricaded themselves inside a housing area Friday night, then began setting fire to mattresses and books. Some Urbana residents are kicking off a drive to change the voting system for municipal elections. They're mounting a petition campaign to implement an instant runoff system of determining city office holders. Unlike the current system, voters would rank their preference of candidates. If nobody gets a majority of votes, names would be eliminated, and second and third choice ballots would be counted until somebody wins. Supporters say it gives third-party candidates a fair chance. It would take 700 signatures to get a referendum on the ballot next year. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to WILL in Urbana. We're joined on this Monday afternoon by Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, I spent some time overseas last week. The rain tried to chase me around, never did quite catch up with me. I was lucky, actually, as we traveled through a good portion of Europe.
Great. How was the trip?
You know, it was really fast and furious, and I'll give you one quick example. This is a really fast and furious example, but this was indicative of the trip and how well it went. On Wednesday of last week, I had breakfast in Krakow, Poland, lunch in Paris, France, and supper or dinner in Brussels, Belgium.
So wow. So you were kind of riding the jet stream across Europe last week.
We were riding the jet stream. Indeed, we were. Speaking of the jet stream, it looks like it's going to put some rainfall across the Midwest. Am I reading those things right? Is that correct?
Yeah, you are correct, Todd. And the pattern here this week is going to feature an active jet stream positioned right across the Midwest. And within that jet stream, several waves of low pressure, storm systems across through, and that will bring more opportunities for rain here across the Midwest as we go through this week, and it looks like beyond that as well.
And then as you take a look around the globe, what do you see in the way of trouble spots? Anything?
Well, the area that we're focused on right now from a trouble standpoint is actually Russia and parts of Ukraine, which have been very hot over the past couple of weeks and have been on the dry side here for numerous weeks. And as a result, for their heading winter wheat, that has a reduced yield potential. And there's just no sign of that area improving here coming up over the next couple of weeks. Another area, at least that we're watching, not a major problem at this time, is across China, as that region will be turning warmer and drier here coming up over the next week to 10 days. In fact, temperatures across that key North China Plain region, which encompasses a good chunk of their corn and bean acreage in central China, that area is going to be turning very hot here as we go later on this week, with high temperatures climbing up to the mid to upper 90s. Since soil moisture reserves are very good at this time, that is why this heat wave and lack of rain is not of any concern at this time. However, we just don't want that to continue here for many, many weeks here. And so that area will be in need of rain here later on this month to help improve that situation.
And then if we could come back to the U.S. and go just a bit full circle, I know that Asian soybean rust has been, I think, discovered again in, well, I know it has, but new indications coming up in parts of the far southern part of the United States. We'll be mostly concerned about hurricanes that might sweep those spores northward. What's hurricane season look like so far?
Well, you know, we started off here a bit on the active side, although it's still debatable whether our first named storm of the season here, Andrea, whether that was a true tropical storm or not. But nonetheless, we have two named storms here in the book up to this very early stage of the season here. And in general here for the Atlantic basin, as we're talking the Atlantic, Caribbean, Gulf of Mexico, we are expecting a more active season here coming up. But, you know, whether these storms remain offshore or make landfall here in the U.S., it really comes down to storm formation during that specific time frame of the season.
Mark, we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure, Todd.
Hey, Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. That is this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. If you missed something, you want to go back and hear it, you can. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.